Nope. Seen it. Oh, nah.
Can't find something to watch? Introducing Sky Stream. It's Sky without the dish. Watch unmissable Sky exclusives like The Regime and Netflix too, all over super reliable Sky full fibre broadband. Get Sky Stream, Sky Broadband and Netflix for just €50 a month. Search Sky Stream. Availability subject location. New customers only. 12-month minimum term. Stream and broadband sold separately. Further terms apply. For more info, see sky.ie/speeds.
Seachtain. An Indo Ascaelige.
Time I mon iroachtaí a dhéanamh teacht ar a chorp. Agus súligam amach an seo, gur féidir é a chur in uaig ceart lena bhaintir féin.
Scíltaí, fios, tuairimí.
Tá sé dochreite nach bhféadfach ara i gcuirna meáin an cheist sin a eicáil.
Bhí an talam a gnám go raibh orthcháir na reachtam. Iadach sé tarraing go raibh an orthcháir san i lis dúthail agus gimine fanacht gór a chlig sár ducha sin éachar. Ná ní bhin ann thar d'oraach sin, bhin marav.
Seachtain. Find us on all the usual podcast platforms.
This is an Irish Independent podcast.
Hello and you're welcome to the Big Tech Show with me, Adrian Weckler. Now, a former burglar, con artist, and expert in deception and physical infiltration, Jenny Radcliffe became the secret weapon of companies trying to close security gaps, which might have led to their companies being hacked or robbed. She would demonstrate her skills on her employers, who would find maybe their security codes or the contents of their safe in her hands. And Jenny Radcliffe spoke to me at the Threat Locker conference in Orlando. Jenny Radcliffe, author of People Hacker, Confessions of a Burglar for Hire, soon to be made into a major TV series. Can you first of all explain what a people hacker is and what you do?
Sure. I mean, I think when people hear the word hacker, they think of, you know, someone very technical, usually in a black hoodie, right? Doing sort of technical things to break into networks. But I was called a people hacker by a journalist a few years ago because I don't use tech. So I use psychology and sort of persuasion skills to get someone to let me into a building or give me information as part of a security test. Mm. So she called me a people hacker and I thought it was a good title. So I nicked it and stuck with it and it's really stuck.
And a book and a big TV deal later, it seems to be working.
Yeah, I mean, the book was, I was asked to write the book for a long time. It's an autobiography, but it's not really in a, you know, it's more like a selection of episodes from The Job. And I wanted to show people the range of work that a social engineer does. And of course, I guess people thought it was exciting enough to make it into a TV show. So I feel very lucky and very happy about that.
And of course, you use the term, I think, because I think the penetration tester is one of the titles. And in your talks, you say you use that term advisedly.
Yeah, too, right? Because in polite company, you know, people outside of the security industry have never heard of this and it sounds really dodgy. But yeah, it's the actual title is Physical Penetration Tester. For now. Mm-hmm. And that just basically means it's the actual site, the physical building that we're trying to get past security and just show some of the gaps maybe in human judgment or in operations. Mm. So that's what we do.
Now, you say that you learned the art of breaking and entering from family, but that your moral code led you to seek a career stopping crooks. Can you just briefly recap how it started for you?
Sure. I mean, when I was little, I grew up in Liverpool. At the time, it was kind of, there was lots of unemployment. So there was quite a bit of crime in the area where I lived. And I'd actually followed a neighbour into a house, a female, she was a teenager. She didn't let me go. So I was stuck there for a while. And then not long after that, I was sort of surrounded by a gang of kids in an alleyway and they were going to kind of beat me up. So my mum and dad got a bit worried and they wanted me to be looked after, and I had a huge family, loads of cousins, which you know yourself, this is a very kind of Liverpool Irish thing too, Adrian. And so I started to hang out with my cousins, but they were getting into a lot of the empty buildings in Liverpool and kind of looking around. So not to take anything, but just because they were empty and they were there. So we kind of, you learn very quickly how to watch for security and how to work with building layouts and things. So we did that for really the whole of my childhood, I remember doing it. But as we got a bit older, we realised there was potential insecurity. And actually, we were talking to football players in a bar, and they said, well, you know, do you do that on houses? Could you do it and see whether, you know, we need any updated locks or whether the cleaner will let you in, that type of thing. So it kind of went from there. Mm. So that's really how it all started.
And what kind of places do you test now?
So these days, I mean, clients over the years have been everything from big corporate sites, so sort of multi-room sites, large buildings, down to private individuals, high net worth individuals, homes. So it can be anything really that requires someone to just check the boundaries, make sure that we can't sneak past or talk our way in. And we've done really unusual places, so casinos, zoos, loads of offices, shopping centres, their control rooms, all that type of thing. So it's quite varied.
You describe yourself as not very technical, though, that it's more about conning, maybe, or tricking your way in, or being very creative. I mean, you've one story about, I think it's a German bank where you pretend to have a broken arm with a plaster cast to get past a biometric test, is it?
Sure, yeah. I mean, I was asked to do this very last minute, and so I had to improvise, and that's really the story of my career, really, is, you know, without much technical knowledge or money, certainly in the beginning, you know, we had to improvise. And I knew there was biometric locks, so I tied up my arm in a bandage, and when my thumbprint didn't work on the biometric entry, I kind of made a big fuss. So I swore a bit, I dropped things, security guard came over. But when I say a bank, I don't mean like the type of bank that, you know, a normal person that I would use. I mean a posh bank for rich people.
Yeah.
So it's not really a bank, it's more like a very expensive hotel. And what I'd done, and this is the key to social engineering, is I'd assessed the culture, and I realised that what somewhere like that really doesn't want is fuss, right? They want quiet and it's got to be calm. So the security guard didn't want me to make a fuss. So he grabbed my hand and pushed my thumb on the pad. I kind of cried out in pain, swore a little bit more, dropped all the stuff I was carrying. And he let me in because it was too much fuss, right? And I look harmless. I just look like a trainer or whatever, a businesswoman, I suppose, going in. And then once I got in, I took the bandage off, dumped all the fake files and went on and did the test.
But other times you've been even more creative. There's a story you tell in your talks about trying to get at a woman's phone, which was in a bag trapped behind stage. And you came up with a very creative solution for that.
Right. I mean, she just wouldn't put her purse down, right? She wouldn't put this bag down. And we needed to get to her phone. But I knew she was a speaker at conferences. And I mean, I speak at conferences. So the one thing you wouldn't do is take a handbag on stage, right? So we kind of knew that. And I had my little team with me. And we sat, four of them in the audience with me. And we all had, we went to a pet shop. And if you go to a pet shop, there are live insects that they use to people buy to feed if they have like a pet snake or a lizard. Mm. And we bought some Indian, I think they were Indian locusts anyway. And we left five of them go in the hall in the audience. Now, everyone knew about this. So security, her own team, security at the hotel. We said it was like a student prank, a test. But of course, everything goes crazy. And in that moment of chaos, I went in and got a phone and we were able to complete the job.
And once you're in a building, for example, you might do something like you might leave a USB key, for example, on a desk, and maybe you'll put a little sticker on it which says confidential or salary details or something like that. And that's really just playing on people's own issues, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, really what we're doing is, I say I'm not technical, but if you think of the brain as a machine, what we're doing is we're hacking that machine. And human beings we share traits, and curiosity is one of them, anger, emotions, all of those things are kind of things we share. So if you know how to tap into those, you can see an opening into the security posture. And so with things like leaving USB keys, even though every single security awareness trainer will always tell you not to plug in a key because you don't know what's on it, could be loaded with malware. People are curious. So first of all, there's a USB, I might plug it in. But if you write confidential, it just ups the ante. It makes it juicier because people just want to know what's on it, even if it's just to help and get it back to the right person. So we know that, and so we write it. And I'm telling you, no matter how much training, people will still plug that in. As all our security people will know, you know, it's a hard thing to resist.
And that is the story of our times. I'm going to ask you in a minute about one of the biggest issues we had in Ireland. But one of your signature moves, which you often say, is to use the stairs. And not just use the stairs, but to go up.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I say that I use the stairs a lot less than I used to because I'm getting a bit old now and it's got tired legs. But yeah, I mean, the thing is, the first job I ever did in Liverpool, I was supposed to take a diary from an office. And I didn't really know, you know, I wasn't very sophisticated then, didn't really know what I was doing. And security came across the room. They were in the opposite end of the room. I took the diary. So I bolted for the door and saw the stairs. And in that moment, I thought, they are going to think I'm going to run down. So I ran up instead. And there's a fire door on the top floor. Busted the door and threw the diary on the roof. And they
What was the diary, by the way?
It was their local politician's diary. It's in my book, actually. Okay. I don't want to talk about it too much, but it was a sort of a diary with some details in that I was asked to take. But I threw it on the roof and then let them catch me, essentially. Well, I say let them. I mean, they were going to anyway, but I was caught. But it bought me some time to go up rather than down because everyone assumes that you're running for the door. And yeah, and so that worked. I went back later and got the diary from the roof. It was wet, it'd been raining, but I got it. And then ever since, I kind of, if I'm faced with those stairs and I think whether, you know, to get away from security who are chasing us, I typically will go to the roof. And there's a lot of things happen on roofs, which you wouldn't expect. So again, I wrote that all down. I've given lots of interviews about it, but you tend to meet people on roofs you don't expect sometimes.
Okay. Do you think you could get in anywhere, given the right time frame? And
so, do you know, if you'd have asked me that a year ago, I would have said yes, because there's always a human element. And I do think that pretty much if there's a human controlling the lock, then there's a way around it. Okay, even, you know, even if you want to get really kind of dramatic about it, but there will always be a way. But you know, this is, I've not told anyone this before, but I did go to a place quite recently where there was a building that we were asked to look at. And I think we couldn't have got in. And it was because the whole thing was completely controlled by AI, right? So the whole thing is that there's no real... I mean, obviously, at some point, there is a human element there, but there didn't seem to be anything. But it was just like a solid steel block with, like, I couldn't even see a door. But the thing about it was on a hill and completely surrounded by flat land. And I think that would be a real challenge, because even to walk up to it, you'd be seen. There's no human control in the system. So maybe that's probably the hardest one I've ever seen. But if there's people involved in the security system, then there's always a way. But I think that one would be difficult.
Because we're talking here in America, where I'm interviewing you, but in visiting a lot of the big American tech multinationals, they've always seemed to be very, very strict. Google has these policies where they won't let you in and if you've got a pass. But then on the other hand, Americans tend to be very open-hearted. They wear their heart on their sleeve, almost kind of vulnerable in a way that maybe we mightn't be.
I think you just have to work with the culture. I mean, you know, what I you can't say Americans, you know, group everyone together, because it's so many different types of places. You know, every state's different. But yeah, you know, helpfulness can be something that you see as a vulnerability and you can exploit. What I'd say is, when there is somewhere, and I've been asked this before, when you say, oh, well, that place has got great security. So you mentioned some of the big tech firms, but you could talk about, say, a prison or you know,
or just fly a drone
a vault
into a prison
of some, of some kind. And they say, well, you'd never get in. The question is, who can get in and then be the person who can?
Okay.
If someone's allowed in, then we can get in.
But then is there any real defense? Like, I referred to Ireland a few minutes ago, and our biggest IT incident was a couple of years ago. Our health system, called the HSE, it was a ransomware attack, and it looked like that was a social engineering hack. HSE is a huge organization, has many thousands of people. According to the principles of what you're saying, could be possible in thousands of different ways to get in. I mean, is there any defense to that? I mean, is there a message that you have for people? Is it to stop being open? Is it to stop trusting people?
No, it's not that. I mean, the defense is always working with the people. The defense, nothing's ever going to be completely secure. You know, it's going to be, if people are determined, they'll find a way. But you can't run a company or live your life like that. What you have to do is say, we're going to keep everyone informed. We're going to use the best tech we can afford and keep it up to date. We're going to use the appropriate solutions. And we're going to make sure people know what to look out for. Mm. And at the end of the day, I feel that that's all we can do. I don't think we can hope to be completely ahead of everything all the time. Mm. And we've seen some of these, like you say in Ireland, but there's major, there's governments, there's whole countries get their systems hacked, there's tech companies, some of the biggest get hacked, right? But what you do is you learn from it and you improve and you keep going. Otherwise, we're giving up and we're letting the bad guys win.
When you successfully completed a task or an assignment, what typically was the consequence to that? I mean, there's another story where you tell about a factory that had spent 2 million on a security system. You managed to bypass it, being very creative. I mean, is it in that instance or instances like that that the organization just tells its guards or its personnel or whoever, don't be so gullible? Or
do you know what, there's no like cookie cutter answer to that. Like every job's different and every solution's different. I think the jobs that I come away and I'm happy with sort of 6 months later is when they've done everything they can to educate people. They've corrected any obvious glaring errors like gaps in fences. And, you know, we had one place where we had caches of equipment all around the perimeter of this really very secure fence. But there were a couple of trees. And so we knew that we could kind of throw things over. If you get one person in, we could get all the kit in. And they fix it. Like, you know, so if someone fixes that, that's very pleasing because, as I say, it's a journey. There's no destination in security. It's always a journey. You always got to look to improve. But there are many clients who are doing any kind of security test as a compliance exercise. And once it's done, they sort of tick the box and they don't improve. And that's really sad and also really dangerous, you know. So it just depends. Every job's different, really.
And you often talk about physically researching assignments, like maybe going to a bar or trying to learn the culture of an organization. Mm-hmm. And a lot of that was physical years ago. And now there's just so much from social media and from an online presence that you can learn. But that's here to stay, isn't it? I mean, there's no really resiling from that, is there?
No, I don't think so. I think it's here to stay. And I mean, yeah, it's made the depth and the breadth of our research and the accuracy of the details on a target really much easier to get and work with, to find sort of the narrative that gets you into that target, into that site. Years ago, we didn't have that. So, you know, everything was slower and, like you say, in person. Now, it's not just that we can do research online for things like people's addresses. They're on things like the electoral roll, people's directorships, what companies they're on. You know, there's so much information that's free or almost free about all of us online. But it's not that. And the point I make in the talk is that everybody posts stuff about themselves. So, you know, your address and what companies you run or whatever, that you might think that's harmless. But is it harmless to know, I don't know, that you raise money for a certain charity? And people don't see the connection, but then I know that that's something that you're interested in. So now I can start hitting you with those stories, whether it's a phone call or an email or social media. And it kind of just chips away at people's defences. Mm. So, you know, it's here to stay and it can be dangerous. But we're all tempted to do it, right? Because it helps us with businesses. It helps us stay in touch with people.
It's also human.
And I always say, I'm not saying don't go on social media, don't post. I'm just saying do it in an informed way, recognise the risks, and then you have to make your own choices to whether...
Because we like sharing things about our lives.
I wouldn't even know me in touch with half the people I'm in touch with if it wasn't for social media. But you've got to make it serve you and recognise the risks, I think. And I think as adults, we need to pass that on to teenagers and kids because they grow up with it. They don't necessarily see it's dangerous. But, you know, saying that, I say that, And I have family, and obviously I know a lot of sort of their friends and sort of our wider family have got lots of teenagers and kids. And actually, the kids give me hope because they are suspicious.
Oh, they're much wiser than us.
And they're much more damning of someone who they think is up to no good, aren't they, than perhaps we would be. We kind of, I've found, and I mean, I'm speaking just personal experience, but I found, you know, I might say, well, that could be innocent, or, you know, let's make sure that that person's nefarious or, you know, whatever. But the kids are just flat out now. Block them, report them, dump them, because they kind of have grown up with it in that way. And that's kind of cool. It gives me hope, you know.
Finally, there's a big TV series coming out based on your memoir.
Yeah.
Do we know yet when that's going to be out?
So everyone asked me this. So my book came out in February 2023 in hardback. It's now out in paperback in the UK anyway. And I just found out it's out in the States as well, on Amazon in the States, which is nice. And at the same time, it was the rights to the story were optioned by a UK TV film company called Working Title, who are amazing, and I'm so pleased. The thing is, this is a big production, and big productions take a long time. So everyone's really impatient to see when this will come out. No one more impatient than me, I can promise. And I'm working with them on it. But it takes a long time. I never knew until I worked in that world more what a massive undertaking this is. And I mean, it's lining up all the kind of production, the directors, the showrunners, the actors, the cameras. It takes a long time, and then there's all the locations and everything else. I would rather it took that time, and it was how I would like it to be. It's inspired by the book. It's not a direct translation of it. Then rush it a little bit, get it out quicker, and it not be the size and quality production that we're hoping for. So I've put myself completely in their hands because they know what they're doing. And so I don't know. I can't give you a date, but I mean, it will be a while yet.
And I don't know much about this world. Typically, do you get any creative input into that or not?
So I am very much part of the show. I'm executive producer on the show. What I said to them was, you know, they wanted me to be part of it, obviously. And it's a good thing I am, because they'll need a burglar to make it. And unless you know someone else who does that job, I'm probably your best bet.
Okay. Well, Jenny Radcliffe, People Hacker, thank you so much for joining us on The Big Tech Show. And that was Jenny Radcliffe, author of People Hacker, Confessions of a Burglar for Hire. Rory Bones was on sound, and JJ Clark produced this podcast. I'm Adrian Weckler, and you've been listening to The Big Tech Show.
No. Nope. Seen it. Oh, nah.
Can't find something to watch? Introducing Sky Stream. It's Sky without the dish. Watch unmissable Sky exclusives like The Regime and Netflix too. All over super reliable Sky full fibre broadband. Get Sky Stream, Sky Broadband and Netflix for just €50 a month. Search Sky Stream. Availability subject to location. New customers only. 12-month minimum term. Stream and broadband sold separately. Further terms apply. For more info, see sky.ie/speeds.